Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening, we'll talk about Nigeria's campaign against Boko Haram. And with us tonight is Dr. Kabir Mato, as a political science professor at the University of Abuja. He joins us by phone from the Nigerian capital. Good evening, Dr. Mato.
Hello, good evening.
How are you today?
Good.
Thank you.
And how are you?
Fine, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We also have Karen Atia. She is the Washington Post Opinions Deputy Digital Editor. Good afternoon, Karen.
Good afternoon. Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. As I said, our topic tonight is going to be Nigeria's campaign against Boko Haram. There has been increased attacks against Boko Haram by the Nigerian army as Wednesday, according to reports. The Air Force struck and destroyed solar panels believed to have been used by Boko Haram for electricity in Sambisa Forest. Over the weekend, there are equally other reports of attacks against those positions. Dr. Mato, are people feeling a difference there? Is there increase? Is it true that there's increased attacks, or what? How do you read the situation?
Well, I think the situation now seems to be that the security forces are really taking control of the situation because the areas of dispute, the line of the battle in the northeastern part of the country is gradually being reduced. The insurgents, from the reports we are receiving, are being gradually, restricted to specific areas. And we can see that, through the seriousness, if we like to say so, the political leadership, who seem to have engineered the leadership of the military. And I think the battle now, really, a few days ago, one of the major towns that was under the control of the insurgents was also taken back by the national troops. And like you said, and on a daily basis, what we hear now is a report of successes, and achievements by the national troops against the insurgents, which is entirely different, a different story from what we have had, especially in the last administration. So I think the government is making a headway. The security forces are gaining control of the situation. But as you know, this is a guerrilla insurgency. And I hope, the security forces will come to that realization and, apply all necessary skills and mechanisms that are necessary to ensure that places that are now being liberated by them, are held, like what used to happen in the past when the security forces will take out the insurgents only for them to regroup and come back and take over these controls. But I think, in all honesty, in the last 1 or 2 months, the report here has been very encouraging, and it appears now that Nigerians are now believing statements coming from the military, or like what we used to have in the past. Every day saying we're on top of the situation, and then the next moment it's, some horrible attack coming from the insurgents.
I see. Karen, you just had Dr. Mato there refer to this. Do you attribute these changes to change leadership or the army? Because the army is still the same army eventually.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I guess from here, the perspective in Washington, is that or was that, Muhammadu Buhari's background as a military leader and his ties to himself being a northerner would certainly help against the fight, help with the fight against Boko Haram. It is to be noted also that, in the last several months, the efforts of the multinational force, so this is the joint efforts with Chad, Niger, and Cameroon, so we have to take into account that this is a regional fight against Boko Haram. Now, this is an 8,700 member strong force, and reports are saying that the force is meant to be deployed sometime in the very near future, although we don't know exactly when, of course, for tactical reasons. But the regional push, especially with the aid of Cameroon in this fight against Boko Haram, has definitely made a difference. However, there is the need to avoid becoming complacent with Boko Haram, because they have managed to carry out extremely deadly guerrilla attacks against civilians, especially in the Northeast. And there are the worrying reports of militants being arrested and captured in Lagos. So Boko Haram is still a very deadly force, though they've been weakened. It's not, we can't afford to let down our guard against them.
I see. Dr. Mato, to Karen's point there, yes. Was the involvement of other countries like Chad, Cameroon, and Niger that came in, could they have helped in maybe trying to contain the militants?
Well, I think it is important. One of the areas where Nigerian government got strong initially was the inability to immediately bring together, you know, a multinational force like they had to do much later, you know, because the areas of operation of the insurgency is, you know, mainly around the fringes of, you know, border areas between Nigeria, Cameroon, Nigeria, Chad, Nigeria, Niger Republic, and so on and so forth. So it's really very difficult, given the you know, so-called sovereignty and you know, national boundaries of the countries, for Nigeria to perhaps be able to chase or pursue insurgents into any of these countries without a concrete military agreement on the ground. And I think the government of Goodluck Jonathan, that was removed in May this year, only came to think about the necessities of, you know, having this multinational force when, you know, the crisis really became too significant, too unbearable, and then also facing the crisis of election and so on and so forth. But above all, I think the multinational joint task force now also realizes the very serious nature of the political leadership on ground. Because the government of General Muhammadu Buhari, since coming to power, has released quite a tremendous quantum of resources that will help, you know, boost the morale of the troops on one hand, and on the other hand, also get all available logistics and possibly weaponry and other, you know, to be able to contend with this crisis. So I think apart from, you know, the inroads that Nigerian military seems to be making, a very important factor in getting this insurrection under control, of course, is the engagement of the multinational joint task force, and I think it's also going to be very useful if the task force, you know, remains, you know, for much a longer period, so that it's not disbanded immediately. The insurrection is seen to have been perhaps defeated. It must be perhaps a standing force that will be there, because the northeastern flank of Nigeria, which borders with Cameroon, Chad, and Niger Republic, actually suffers from a lot of social issues in terms of crisis. You know, it's an arid area where it's even difficult for people to farm. The level of literacy there is very low. The economic activity is also at its lowest. So a combination of mass illiteracy and very poor economic, you know, condition, in fact, constitute a major fulcrum of the genesis of the insurrection, you know, in the very first place. So I think while the military action is going on, it is also very pertinent and important for both the government at the center and, you know, the state government in Nigeria and the government in Chad, Cameroon, and Niger Republic to appreciate the obvious social crisis that manifested itself in that area, and deliberately, you know, intervene by ensuring that, you know, education is massively supported, economic activities of the people also strongly supported, with a view to perhaps nipping in the bud, you know, the possibilities of a future breakout of such crisis in that area. So I think, in a nutshell, back to your question, the multinational joint task force is also a contributing factor in the kind of successes that is being achieved. But above all, like I said, The very nature of the political leadership that we have in Nigeria today that seems to command tremendous respect on the part of Nigerians and even on the part of the leadership of these neighboring countries is also another very important factor in, you know, the successes that are gradually being recorded in this insurgency, war against insurgency.
I see. Karen, further to his point there, given the social issues involved and given that troubles in those, that northeastern part of Nigeria, even Boko Haram, it appears, seems to have identified the area because they have increased the attacks on countries bordering Nigeria's northeastern region in Chad, Niger, Cameroon. Just today, at least 10 people were killed and many more wounded in two bomb attacks in northern Cameroon. By the fact that this joint task force, may it be spreading the problem now, or what? How do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's extremely early to really tell whether or not this is caused by the task force, only because they haven't really officially sort of begun their next big offensive. But I think it's important to remember that the borders between Nigeria and Cameroon and a lot of these neighboring countries are extremely porous, and people cross back and forth between these countries all the time. And so that is one factor that makes defeating Boko Haram or even identifying Boko Haram extremely, extremely difficult. So I think that's one thing to keep in mind. Also, I mean, Gilbert Jonathan and the leaders of these countries, I mean, it will take effort to really be able to coordinate their offensive. I mean, Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Chad, of course, being Francophone countries. I mean, you have different styles of military approaches, you know, especially with Cameroon and Niger and Chad being supported by the French. The French have also, you know, obviously taken an interest in this fight. The issues of sovereignty, the issues of which country is accountable, or which country is sort of where does the buck stop, so to speak, when it comes to being accountable for progress in the fight against Boko Haram. I think these are a lot of issues that will have to be worked out. But again, I think all the countries now realize again that Boko Haram is a regional threat. I think it's important to remember that Cameroon, especially Cameroon, some of these neighboring countries were reluctant to get into the fight against Boko Haram for a long time, and it perhaps wasn't until the last 2 years or so that Boko Haram began actively threatening Cameroon and Niger and Chad. So I think, in a lot of ways, I think it's not the most reassuring answer, but I think in a lot of ways we'll have to wait and see what happens. And, of course, the United States has been committed to supporting the efforts of the multinational task force. The U.S. has agreed to support with intelligence sharing and to support the multinational task force. Again, there was the political fallout over the over whether or not the United States could provide Nigeria itself with weapons. But in the meantime, the U.S. has been supportive of this multinational joint task force. And so it definitely is an issue that the United States is still monitoring and still takes an active interest in.
Okay, we're going to follow up on that issue of the U.S. support and the morale of the forces. But just let's take a short break right now. We'll be back to continue our discussion of Nigeria's campaign against Boko Haram. Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is Nigeria's campaign against Boko Haram Our panelists are Karen Atia of The Washington Post and Dr. Kabir Mato, political science professor at the University of Abuja. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Dr. Mato, Karen just mentioned something there about the Joint Task Force, the support the U.S. government is supposed to be giving it. As you may recall, it's not the first, it's not recent that the U.S. government tried to help, to give some support. But there were issues of morale among the Nigerian forces. There were accusations of corruption, even accusations of some elements in the Nigerian forces maybe collaborating with the militants. What are you hearing? Has the morale changed? Has the discipline improved? What are you hearing from around there?
Yes, I think that's a very important, you know, factor that has resulted in allowing the insurgency to degenerate to the level that it has reached. One is that there has always been this agitation on the part of the soldiers or on the battlefield that they lacked weapons and equipment. In fact, at a point during the last administration, the governor of Borno State, came to Abuja to speak to the press and said, the Nigerian military lacked sophisticated weapons. So covertly saying that the Boko Haram insurgents have more superior weapons than even the Nigerian military. That, in fact, and a lot of anger on the part of, the former president and, several sections of the Nigerian society. But what we're hearing now, after the government of Goodluck Jonathan and after the service chiefs, that worked with him, at the tail end of that administration, is the fact that truly Nigerian military did not have the weapons to fight the insurgents. So, whatever the case was, they were simply deployed to battlefront without necessary ammunition to protect themselves, not even to talk about pursuing the insurgents with the view to winning the battle. Things have changed now. The morale of the soldiers is gradually boosting because the mere sighting of credible leadership on the part of President Muhammadu Buhari sends a lot of signals. And in fact, the military commanders themselves, you remember on May 29th, when the government was inaugurated, the president promised to relocate the command center of the Nigerian military to the troubled areas. So it is not about commanders now going to Borno, Yole, Yola, or Yobe State to simply run a fanfare and then come back to Abuja. The battle is being re-strategized. The soldiers have the spirit of fighting. The morale is high, and the commanders are determined because the president has specifically instructed them to end the insurgency within 3 months. But of course, yes, apart from the moral and financial support that seems to be coming from the United States of America, the recent visit of President Buhari to the United States of America also came with it the other component, of the resolution of the crisis, and that is the UN, advancing a lot of resources in reconstructing and rebuilding the northeastern part of the country. So I think two things now. One is that certainly the morale of the soldiers and their spirit to fight this battle is, all-time high, specifically because of the seriousness they see on the part of their commander-in-chief. And secondly, also the adjustment by way of appointment of new security chiefs in the country that took place just recently also indicated the fact that, little politics was involved in the selection exercise, but rather the regular military capabilities of individual services, was what was taken into consideration. And clearly we see a lot of changes, taking place. Like I did say, it's going to be very difficult to automatically just wake up in the morning and automatically, see that all these issues are dealt with or are addressed. Mm-hmm. The insurgency deploys the guerrilla tactics in the discharge of its own kind of warfare, and therefore it is not surprising that you will hear one bomb in this part today, you will hear the other one, because they will have to continue to do it like that. But the important thing that I think is happening now is that their central nervous system is gradually being decapitated by the Nigerian military as well as by the Joint Task Force that has been put in order to address this problem. Whereas morale is high now, the soldiers are fighting, and more so that the former Chief of Defence Staff in Nigeria, who once argued that it is a lie, it's a matter of propaganda of those people saying that the military didn't have weapons. When he was being pulled out of service, he clearly told the whole world that the last time Nigerian government bought arms and ammunition was sometimes in the middle of 2000. So clearly, including those soldiers who were arrested and court-martialed, some of them have been sentenced to death, some of them have been dismissed from the military simply because they retreated from battlefront on the allegation that they did not have weapons to match the firepower of the insurgents. Mm-hmm. So I think the confidence is gradually being re-established. The morale of the soldiers is also higher than ever, as well as the dedication on the part of the commitment on the part of the commanders on the battlefield and outside of the battlefield in order to ensure that this insurrection is brought to an end, at least, the next very few months.
I see. Karen, I'll throw this question to both of you, but beginning with Karen. Our listeners may know that Boko Haram was founded in 2002, claiming to fight against Western education. But they've been launching military operations since 2009. They have killed thousands of people, mostly in northeastern Nigeria, abducted hundreds, including the 200 girls, the Chibok girls. They even had the audacity to join Islamic State and form some sort of caliphate or province. They had seized large chunks of areas in the northeast Nigeria, but now they're beginning to cede control of those areas. There are people who argue that the Joint Task Force and the Nigerian Army may be a step behind, because now all they have to do is morph into an insurgency. Just you need two suicide bombers to come and cause havoc, and you can't fight such an insurgency using a conventional army in a conventional way. So are the Boko Haram militants a step ahead?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, we've definitely seen that Boko Haram, that their tactics can evolve, right? I mean, to a certain extent, Boko Haram started out as a guerrilla warfare group and then moved to much more sort of conventional, deadly tactics, showing signs of planning and of organization and using weapons that were more powerful than what the Nigerian army had. I think there's no doubt, President Goodluck Jonathan's administration came under international criticism for failing to really take this threat very seriously. I mean, he himself even admitted that in the beginning they thought that this was just a northern problem, an issue that would not exactly resolve itself, but let's just say he did not treat it with the urgency that the problem deserved. So in that sense, there is a sense that the army is playing catch-up, or at the very least having to make up for that lost time and the price of those lives lost during all those years when the problem perhaps was not treated as the problem that it really was or is. But I think this issue of again, the suicide attacks, the suicide bombs, I think this is a question of how we combat terrorism worldwide, globally even. And this is an issue for the United States. This is an issue for any power that's involved with armies that are not conventional, armies that use weapons, use suicide bombers, armies that use ideology, armies that do not abide by our conventional rules of law, like bombing schools, churches, hospitals, kidnapping children, raping, using women and girls as sex slaves. I mean, Boko Haram is not playing by any sort of conventional rules. And I think that, again, in the fight against terrorism, this is a global challenge of how to deal with armies that are using non-conventional tactics, not respecting borders. Again, Boko Haram is a borderless threat in the sense that they are carrying out attacks across into Chad and into Niger and into Cameroon. So while yes, I would say, you know, that the Nigerian army has to make up for a lot of sort of lost time, I would also argue that this is part and parcel of the difficulties of combating terrorism globally.
I see. Dr. Macho, I guess he also rephrased my question and answered it that way. But in other words, can you defeat the insurgents just militarily? You just can't, because there are other factors involved, because the time they have taken to morph from one organization to another, to a caliphate, to the suicide bombing, don't you think there's more needed than the military force element?
Well, that is what the issue is, that it has to be the carrot and stick approach. You use the military because the insurgency is, taking a lot of, national precious lives of Nigerian citizens and other citizens of other countries. So you need war to do that. But like I said earlier on, one of the important ways of defeating this is that quite a lot of them, I understand, are surrendering, and some of them are being arrested. What the last government needs to do is simply to round some people and shoot them and kill them. I think government must also come with a carrot approach. The carrot approach here is that, like I did say earlier on in this program, it is critical that the very social basis of this insurrection is abject, neglect, that manifests itself by the way of illiteracy. There are more children out of school in the northeastern part of Nigeria than in any other part of the country. Poverty, the economic activity in that region is very low, so the level of poverty, therefore, is very high, and therefore standard of living is low, cost of living is so high. So these are the basic issues that I think the government, the private sector, and all international organizations must partner together in order to, find way of alleviating this problem, so that those who are likely to be de-radicalized out of the movement would immediately channel the energies and exuberance into positive ventures, rather than perhaps just staying idle, doing nothing. And if we look at the history of the group itself, it came up basically as a resistance, to the products of Western education. The argument simply was that here we are, some people who have gone to school in the name of Western education and acquired sometimes tremendous quantum of education, and they are in charge of our bureaucracy, in charge of our security services, in charge of our politics. Mm-hmm. What they do to us basically is to loot our resources.
Karen,
question the integrity of Western education. Okay. Now, what I'm saying here is that Boko Haram insurgency, like many other upheavals that you have across the globe, especially in the third world capitalist social formation, hinged strongly on neglect, on poverty,
etc. We're running out of time. Karen, 10 seconds. Karen,
deploy the military.
Sure.
We're running out of time, Karen.
Sure. If I could jump in real quickly, I mean, this issue of using the conventional military against Boko Haram, we also have to recognize that there is a use for the military, and especially in securing the places that have been, in places where Boko Haram has been driven out, in order for especially a lot of the refugees to come back, they need to feel safe and they need to feel secure. So the Nigeria should also really focus on securing some of those areas, even in areas where Boko Haram has been defeated, but securing those areas so that people can come back to their homes and at least try to reestablish their lives again.
Well, we are out of time. That's what time for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Karen Atia, Washington Post Opinions Deputy Digital Editor, and Dr. Kabi Mato, a political science professor at the University of Abuja. Thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you
very much.
You're welcome. Our producer is Jackson Mungani, and our engineer tonight was Cornelius Turner. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. In case you missed any part of this program, you can still get it by going to our main website. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@vonews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Puga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.